Hey, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interviews. Today we have Blenn Blore here with his short film, 8 minutes long, but it's very interesting, McKinley. I probably screwed it up. It's all right. He'll fix it if I did. Hey, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm excellent. So, English police dramas, I would say, are very popular throughout the world.
Yeah.
And you seem to have created a short. So, was that your plan, just to go, okay, I like these things, I'm going to do my own?
So, McKinley's been in the pipeline for about at least a decade. We needed to get it out into the open so people could see it and eventually get it onto a bigger canvas, so a series. Going forward, we intend to enter into film festivals and see if we can pique interest through that way.
So, 10 years in the making. Why did it take 10 years to get to an 8-minute short?
We've been, obviously, life unfortunately gets in the way. When we finally decided to start making films, obviously we went on the short film route, and we did two shorts previous, and then the third short, we were like, well, what are we going to do? Let's finally sit down and do McKinley, and as I mentioned before, get it out there, get it in front of the public, and see what they think, and hopefully get it onto a big canvas.
Now, did you already have your actors in mind then and everything? If you've already done two shorts before, which I have not seen, are you reusing the same actors, or is this all new cast?
So my previous short, Crossing Paths, which is also on YouTube, available to watch, won quite a few awards in the independent film festival circuit. And the actors from that short I have used for McKinley because they are exceptional, I think.
Excellent. So you've got the thing, it's filmed, it's ready, and you had to add music to it. You use instrumental music, and I think it's very powerful throughout your short, the use of this.
Yeah, the music was key because the music is obviously in film a secondary character, and it tells the story, the journey of McKinley from when we first meet him to the end, and obviously leaves it open. Sat down and spoke with the composer, who is local to me, only about 5 minutes away, and which is handy. Mm-hmm. And we chatted and we talked about it, and he said to me, it's not about the crime and violence. Yes, that's in there, but the key to this story is the relationship between McKinley and his daughter. It's the love story and what a parent wouldn't do for their own child. And once we've got the essence of the story behind the murder and the crimes, we went with those themes. And he created, I think, an absolutely stunning melody theme for McKinley.
Yeah, when you start your scenario, I'm going to kind of ruin this a bit, but I'll try to duck around a bit of it. You start off the scene with a very angry parent.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is, like, angry. I mean, I don't know how he gets from 0 to 10 so quickly. Like, they're just watching a film. I think this is I really presented it, it seems like an everyday thing in the film. Was that your plan for it?
Yes. So what our intentions were, abuse happens on every scale of life, whether you're working class, whether you're middle class or upper class, abuse is there throughout life. And anything can trigger it. So in our short film, he's come home, he's probably been out, he's probably had a few drinks with his friends, he's come home, and the child should be in bed. He's beyond his bedtime, and it's pushed his buttons. And from then on, he's a changed man. And then, it goes on from there, and it leads up to what happens at the crescendo before the main title sequence.
Yes. The mom seems to need a drink to cope with this. Am I reading this into correct? You seem to like display everything about this family in about 4 minutes that we need to know.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, she's by no means a weak character. She does fight back verbally, and maybe we get the hint of that she's fought a corner before, but this seems to be like the last straw. Broke the camel's back, and so we don't want to be cliche when we're describing violence and abuse in our films, but we try to bring a new light to it, if you like.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't say you're a cliche, because you even have a scene of the dad coming down the stairs taking his belt off.
Yeah, so, I mean, we had to be very, very careful with the abuse and what abuse was going to be, what all the child was going to experience. And we obviously we weren't going to show it because it's too much. So we decided to use reflections. Who I do the films with, he was looking at the wall at the back of the bedroom, and he says, "Well, why can't we show the shadows of the belt on the back of the wall with lighting?" So that's what we did, and I got really excited by it. So we used the sound effects and the lighting to imitate what was happening to the child. So yeah, we're in 2019, but the film's showing that some people are still stuck way back when we should all be moving forward.
Now, at this point, you have a broken glass at one point, and I don't, that's not really a question of the broken glass. How was that to clean up?
An absolute pain in the backside. Our costume designer or production designer spent a good hour cleaning that up. It's actually sugar glass, so no one was hurt. But we had four sugar glass wine glasses. Three of them were mouldy when they arrived,
Oh. So
we only had one. So in theory, we only had one sugar glass, so it was one take only. But so pressure was on.
When you shot that, it seems like you just had that shot set up perfectly. The way they hit the floor, the way you had the colors working. Did you color touch it, or is that just all one? That's the way it looked.
The lighting guys, who are absolutely fantastic. When we make films, I like to get the crew 2 or 3 weeks prior, and I like to talk with them for at least hours on end about the light, even for a short film. I can spend up to anything 2 to 3 weeks prior to shooting talking about lighting, how it's going to look, the grading of it. So they knew from the get-go of how that scene was going to look. It was going to be dark. There were going to be shadows. And the camera was just literally sat on the floor, ready for it to drop.
I was wondering that. I was like, how is he doing this? Okay, that makes perfect sense. You have a very nice house location. I did like the way you came off the beginning and gave us the full view of the house instead of starting exactly in. Why was that?
So, in our films, we always like to create good dramatic. In short films, you've got a limited space of time. So, you have to get the establishing shot in there and then. So, in our two previous films, it's the same. The establishing shot is, well, that's it, it's in your face. So you know where the scene's set, you know where the story is, then you can move forward. You don't have to keep cutting back and forwards.
Did you have a particular house in mind? Because I do like the look of this house. I find it's very distinctive. Because, I mean, go ahead.
We didn't want to be cliché. We didn't want it to be some run-down family living in some, horrendous house that you wouldn't want to live in. Again, like I've said before, these types of stories happen on every walks of life. So it's clearly a middle-class, maybe to upper-class family. And luckily, it's the composer's sister's house. So we sat down and spoke to the family and said, look, this is what was going to happen. It was a 3-day shoot, all in that location. And then they said yes. And luckily, they did the catering for us as well. So that was a bonus. But I just wanted to get across that it happens on every walk of life. It's not all downtrodden and grim,
Okay. Something happens in the film. I'm going to try to work around this again as much as I can. You have an old school phone. It's covered in blood, so people know something happens. How was working with blood? Because it seemed to get on the carpet, on the phone. You have to put on your actor.
So our makeup artist, Katie, who is absolutely, again, it's the same crew from my award-winning short a couple of years ago, so I brought them all back. She knows the stuff. I can say to Katie, I want blood here. She will make it thicker. She will make it thinner. I think I'm skipping forward a bit, but there's a bit of blood on a counter in the kitchen.
Yes.
Later on. She actually broke up a tea bag and put it in a glass because it thickens the blood and makes it go all lumpy. So all what you're seeing is actual tea leaves. It mixed in with fake blood to make it look like flesh and bits of hair and everything else.
It looked good, though. I liked that. I liked all the effects. I thought looked really well. Like I said, you did a very good job of displaying your film in only a 7-minute film. I really liked the story. Costuming, I thought, was very important in your film. You seem to have very authentic-looking police costumes to me. I mean, yeah. Maybe Canadian and not seeing British police every day. Maybe I'm missing something. So where did they come from? And was that really your style? You wanted to be everything authentic.
So I was very keen on the look of the police officers and McKinley and his boss who is wearing... British police obviously have rankings like American police do. I wanted the characters to be distinctive. I didn't want them all to be in shirts, ties, and I didn't want them all to be in police uniforms. So I was very keen for McKinley's boss to be in the inspector's uniform. He's the guy wearing the cap, wearing the hat. And I was very keen for the support actors to be wearing proper uniforms. So we searched around with our costume designer and we found a good outlet that provided the police uniforms for a reasonable price. So, yeah, I was really happy with the outcome on that.
Now, did you rent them or did you buy them?
So we rented them for 3 days and they were £550. I'm not sure how much that is equivalent to dollars. But it's reasonable over here anyway.
It's over a grand here.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is great. So I think you were saying earlier, I wasn't quite here, you got fed by the composer's sister?
Yes, she did the catering. Absolutely. Again, you know, I keep using the word. Fantastic hosts. They put up a marquee for us because they live in, they've got, obviously it's a big house and they've got a lot of land. They put a marquee up and we all went outside and then she did chicken and barbecues. It was lovely.
This sounds great. I think I should have been on this set. I think I could have showed up for a couple of days. At the very end of the short, we do an outside shot.
Yep.
And we see something that looks like maybe a plastic sunflower. I wasn't really quite sure.
Yes, it's like a child's sundial, I believe they're called. We spoke, our costume and production designer, we were looking for colour schemes, themes that trigger memories for the main character of McKinley, connecting him to his daughter. I'm not going to say much more, but the production designer decided yellow is a bright colour, happy place for the detective. So when she brought the bracelet and she brought the sundial to match. So whenever he sees a yellow colour or a yellow tint, it triggers not very good memories for him. So okay. It was the colour schemes and the colour theme going forward for the short film.
Okay, I'm going to leave the film here so everybody knows. I'm not going into it anymore. I think I've touched on the highlights, but we're going to go into other parts of your filmmaking.
Yeah.
So your film is finished. Do you take it all? You said you're going to go. Do you go the film fest route? Do you send it overseas or do you just stay in Europe?
No, we're sending it all around the world. We're trying to, I think what every independent filmmaker does, we're trying to do the big ones this time. Our last film did really well on the independent circuit. Well, this time we're trying Sundance, we're trying Slamdance, Tribeca, Raindance, you know, all those types of film festivals. We're doing independent ones as well. But they're the main ones that we're targeting, and maybe Cannes. As I mentioned before, I'm trying to get it onto a bigger canvas, so I believe that's the way forward to do that, as long as I get it.
Is your ultimate goal to be picked up by a television series, or are you looking to do film?
Well, I'm looking to get this made as a television series, but we're also, I'm, as a director, as an individual, looking to do film.
Okay. Now, if this gets picked up tomorrow, are you taking the same cast with you, like the detective, the his people with him, even the woman with the gloves that makes him wear them?
I will be fighting tooth and nail for them, yes, because I probably understand that they'd want to change the cast and make it their own. But I will, if I'm still in charge of the project, yeah, I'll fight tooth and nail for my actors, yeah.
Fair enough. In 10 years in the making, I mean, you must have gone through multiple other films and stuff. Do you find getting dollars for films easier now, or still is just as hard as when you started? Hello? Funding?
So, just as hard as when I started. I have a full-time job. So, amongst paying bills, every bit of cash, bit of money that I have is put on what you've seen before you. Okay. So, yeah, I work every hour God send to see what you've watched on the film.
And so, being an independent filmmaker, what do you think the hardest part is? Feeding your crew, filming it, script writing, or just general people getting eyeballs on the project?
Location.
Really?
I did this in an interview, actually, beginning of the year. Being independent filmmakers, you've got no backing from an official studio. You're not backed. So the minute you step outside, you've got red tape everywhere. You can't shoot in streets. You've got to close them off. Again, you've got no backing. You've got to inform the police, because if you're doing a police drama like we are, you're impersonating police officers. And if you can't find that location, I think your film's pretty much as good as dead. It's got to be, story has got to be put, story, location. Yeah, location fraud is a major, major pitfall. Luckily, with McKinley, we found pretty much the perfect location for it.
Okay.
So, yeah, location fraud.
It's time for fun questions for you. What's your favorite film?
Well, the James Bond series, so I can't really narrow it down. And I say Casino Royale.
No problem. Hey, there's nothing wrong with him. Daniel Craig is amazing.
He's amazing.
He can do no wrong to me. One number one film you've never seen and should have by now?
Psycho by Alfred Hitchcock.
I'm shocked you haven't seen Psycho after seeing your film. I think you really should sit down and see Psycho before next time you come on.
Definitely. 100% agreed. If I've got a spare bit of cash towards the end of the year, I'm going to get the Alfred Hitchcock box set. So.
Oh, it's a lovely thing. It's lovely. Because you're English, I always like to ask this question. Do you have a favorite pub you like to visit?
There's one called the Rose and Crown, which is about 5 minutes from me.
Fair enough. Tell everybody where they can find your film.
They can't find it online yet because it's obviously going to film festivals, so it has to remain out of main. But they can see my other previous works, which are on our YouTube and Vimeo channels, B Squared Films LTD.
Thank you for your time. You were lovely. Have a great evening.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.